Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. The first martini is kind of good and bad, and then two bad martinis to close out today. Jim, seems like February 1st is kind of a long time ago now, doesn't it?
Oh, everything can change in a New York minute or New Hampshire evening.
All right, well, let's start with the good part of the first martini, and that's that Hillary Clinton got slaughtered last night, politically speaking. Bernie Sanders defeated her 60% to 38. Clinton campaign folks were saying, man, if we can just get this thing to single digits, we can spin this as doing way better than expected, according to the most recent polls. Not even close. Sanders, again, 60 to 38, a complete drubbing. The flip side of this, of course, is that of all the record number of voters that went to vote in the New Hampshire primaries, more of them voted for Bernie Sanders than anyone else. A committed socialist, Jim. 143,000 votes and counting. There's still some precincts yet to be counted. Obviously, if the Republicans had had fewer candidates, we might have had someone get close to that number or surpass it. But everybody's feeling the burn up there.
You know, Greg, the license plates up there say live free or die. Guess it's death then, huh? On the one hand, everybody kind of knew Sanders was going to do well. And if you're rooting against Hillary Clinton, that is the good news. But let's face it, turnout for the Democrats was really good, and he won by a ton. I suppose if you're a Hillary fan, you can point out, haha, he's just still winning because of the superdelegates. But that just points to how messed up the Democrats are and how ridiculous their system is compared to that. Look, the Democrats are effectively a socialist party, and now they're becoming much more open and overt about it. In his speech last night, Bernie Sanders was denouncing the drug companies for having profits too big. I mean, look, a good chunk of the Democratic base, and by extension, a not insignificant chunk of America, wants a president to stop people from making profits that are too high. I mean, just let that sink in for a bit, right? This is now there is a strongly and vehemently anti-free market movement afoot in this country. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to take to shake people out of this. We would need a really good Republican candidate to make the case against that. And I'm not so sure we're going to get that, Greg. Let's head on to the interchangeable bad and crazy martinis.
Yeah, here's the big news from the Republican side last night.
We are going to make America great again.
No way to spin out of this one. Donald Trump dominating the Republican field, 35%. He got nearly 100,000 votes. In a nine-person race, if you count Jim Gilmore, John Kasich, a distant second, less than half of the Trump total at 16%. Ted Cruz edges out Jeb Bush for third. Marco Rubio edged out by Bush. Rubio finishes fifth. Christie, a distant sixth. And then Fiorina Carson Gilmore. So, Jim, we obviously saw Trump fail to meet expectations in Iowa. He not only met them, he exceeded them. And for folks who don't like Ted Cruz, you better thank him for winning last week, because if there had been two margins of victory like this, this would be a very tough train to stop, and it still may be.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. Look, he's the guy who came in second in Iowa and first in New Hampshire. Because of Iowa, there was the expectation, okay, maybe Trump's support is overstated in the polls. Maybe his supporters don't turn out that much. Maybe this is all kind of a paper tiger. Well, not after New Hampshire. And this is with, you know, record turnout for Republicans. Trump's voters are motivated. He won just about any way you slice up the GOP electorate that showed up in New Hampshire. Trump won it. You want something baffling, Greg? A majority of voters in New Hampshire want a path to legalization or citizenship for illegal immigrants. Trump took 20% of those voters. Those voters disagree with Trump on the issue of immigration, and they still voted for him, which I think is pretty spectacular. That's kind of a sign. You could either say, voters are stupid. You could say, aha, you know, some of Trump's support goes beyond this issue of immigration. They like his style. They like the fact that he uses words you can't say on television on the campaign trail. Or maybe it's a bandwagon front-run effect. You know, whatever it is, this is going to be a tough candidate to stop. And very little negative advertising has been run against him. The non-Trump alternatives have spent a lot of time beating each other up. They are not running, you know, focusing their fire on the front runner. And Trump is just going to keep, collecting delegates left and right until this happens. This is a frustrating state of affairs for those of us who don't see Trump as the step in the right direction.
Yeah, and you mentioned the exit polls, and they were pretty much no matter what you looked at, whether age or gender or income level or what issue you cared about, whether it's terrorism or the economy or America's going in the wrong direction, with that margin of victory, Trump won every single category. And obviously, New Hampshire isn't like every other state, and we could see different results, but that was a dominating win across the board for Trump, just as it was for Sanders. So then, of course, comes the spin and the lineup following Trump on the Republican side as we head to our crazy martini. Jim, you remember back in 2012, one of the most pathetic opening lines of a post-primary speech ever? This was John Huntsman 4 years ago.
I'd say third place is a ticket to ride, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, such a great ticket. He never even actually made it to primary day in South Carolina. Ended up endorsing Mitt Romney. And, of course, he's been such a dominant figure for the party ever since. But anyway, last night, Kasich, who had been bubbling up in polls recently, I don't think too many people were shocked that he ended up in second place. But he's obviously got a shot in the arm now, which he desperately needs because he has little organization and not a lot of money heading into last night, but I'm sure he'll get a boost out of that. So he goes on, and while John Huntsman said he had a ticket to ride with third place, here was fourth place winner Jeb Bush last night.
Last Monday night, when the Iowa caucuses were complete, they said that the race was now a three-person race between two freshman senators and a reality TV star. And while the reality TV star is still doing well, it looks like you all have reset the race. And for that, I am really grateful.
Nice spin there by Jeb. Here was Kasich, who apparently owns stock in some seatbelt company.
Tonight we head to South Carolina, and we will move through South Carolina, all across this country, and we'll end up in the Midwest, and you just wait. Let me tell you, there's so much going to happen. If you don't have a seatbelt, go get one. We're going to shake this country from top to bottom.
So, Jim, it's amazing what the media and election results will do. Last week, Rubio beat expectations. He was the darling of Iowa, even though he finished in third. Now he disappointed, finished in fifth. A lot of folks think he's missed his opportunity, that the debate basically sunk his campaign. I think that's overplaying the results of one state. But now, of course, Jeb thinks he's got a much better chance, and Kasich is in there. And so now all the buzz is about the people we thought we had gotten rid of.
As I put it last night, Greg, what really made it a bad look, Trump winning, look, all the polls said Trump was going to win, right? I was ready for that. What has me just wanting to grab Granite State voters and shake them violently is how could you pick Kasich as the best alternative? How could you put Kasich in second place? Take Live Free or Die off your, you know, off your license plates. You don't get to vote for the guy who said that Jesus told him to expand Medicaid and then say, oh, no, we're really libertarians. There's nothing libertarian about New Hampshire anymore. My irritation with Kasich grows with each passing debate and all the karate chop moves. I think what really is starting to nag at me is, look, you know, we've made this argument on this podcast and elsewhere on National Review. A lot of people have made this content. You know, if you're not in Iowa or New Hampshire, it doesn't seem to make much sense that Iowa and New Hampshire get to go first. And if you're a Republican, you really start wondering this. Well, what happens is, in the case of Iowa, somebody moves to Iowa, effectively moves to Iowa and just spends a ton of time there. And they think that basically by handshaking enough times, they can do it. They make their entire campaign focused on one state. And sometimes, as in the case of Mike Huckabee or Rick Santorum, it works for a little while. And then at some point, you need to ramp up and run a national campaign and it doesn't work. At some point, they stumble and flop. Kasich is the new version of John Huntsman, as you pointed out, advised by John Weaver, who worked on McCain's campaign in 2000, McCain's campaign in 2008. It did work in 2008, didn't work in 2000, and it didn't work for Huntsman. Notice they're always guys named John, and they're always guys who say, I'm a different kind of Republican. I'm not like the rest of my party. And they always pitch themselves as, the rest of my party is corrupt and evil, but I'm totally not like that because I'm centrist. And for those of us who think of ourselves as conservatives, I don't like candidates who build themselves up by trashing the rest of the party and playing into the leftist narrative. And that's exactly what Kasich does in this. So now Kasich has his second place finish. He's got to go to South Carolina. He's at 2% in South Carolina. After that, it's 2.3% in Florida. John Kasich is at 4% nationally. You know what he was in the last poll in Ohio, his home state? 13%. There's no way John Kasich is going to be able to ramp up to a national, you know, candidacy. And so people say, ah, you know, it wouldn't make sense to have a national primary, or, oh, these little states are cheap and the underdog can catapult themselves to the top tier. It never actually works that way. At some point, we should ask ourselves, if the job of a Republican nominee is to win a national campaign on Election Day in November, maybe the primary should expect them to demonstrate their ability to run things on a big scale. Iowa and New Hampshire are not a big scale, and it's they end up going for these little boutique candidates that are playing to these one individual states. And so John Kasich has probably had the best night of his campaign last night. And it's all downhill from here. And in the meantime, the party's in a mess. So I am cranky and dyspeptic this morning, Greg. And the only good news breaking as we have having this conversation, Greg, Chris Christie's dropping out.
Well, let's talk about that because a couple different points here. Chris Christie, I could just imagine him in Trenton before coming to that decision where some guy was convincing him there was no path to the nomination over and over. And Christie's saying, there it is. There's the 30-second pitch for why we can't keep doing this.
Stop repeating yourself. There you go again. Chris Christie faced a steep hill. And let's see. I'll let you give you a pause to picture Chris Christie trying to run up a steep hill. Observing that ever since the 2012 campaign, fairly or not, a lot of Republicans said that the quasi-hug, the handshake, his warm feelings and comments towards Barack Obama in the closing weeks of the 2012 campaign helped Obama and hurt Mitt Romney. Some people say it's fair. Some people say it's not fair. Then Bridgegate occurred. And whether or not, you know, the media did wildly overhype it, Christie himself never knew what his subordinates were doing, he did hire two terrible people who abused their power. So it wasn't the most wonderful explanation for this. Chris Christie goes out there. He tries to make his campaign. He's always pitching. He's pitching himself as the blue state governor who can stand up for conservative values. And he, you know, look, what he's most going to be remembered for in this campaign is just taking out his hockey stick and just whacking Marco Rubio in the knees in that last debate. Considering how he's at like 7% in New Hampshire, you got to ask yourself, was it worth it? You know, was this a the comparable phrase they use is, you know, murder suicide. Dick Gephardt ran about a bazillion and one negative ads against Howard Dean in Iowa back in 2004, but it didn't help Gephardt. It ended up helping John Kerry. In this circumstance, you got to wonder if Christie going out and just nuking Marco Rubio ended up doing benefits for John Kasich. So, Governor Kasich, you probably should send Christie a fruit basket or something like that this morning.
Any significance to Cruz, who didn't invest much in New Hampshire, taking third over Jeb, who spent like $35 million there?
You know, Cruz can say probably has a fairly plausible case to say he's had a pretty good night. It looks like he is continuing to be cost effective in his way he runs his campaigns. And also, look, the Get Out the Vote operation, all this data research and analysis the Cruz campaign does. You know, they can find Waldo. They can collect every Pokemon. They're the kinds of guys who can do that. It is working out pretty well for him. But I think it's safe to say South Carolina is going to be a very big enchilada for these folks. And if Cruz wins South Carolina, I think it's safe to say he's the front runner. If he doesn't win, then he's got to wonder, you know, if it, you know, Iowa was a good state for him. South Carolina is a very good state for him. New Hampshire wasn't going to be. And, you know, we'll see how it shakes out for him. But I think the pressure is on him now.
Yes, that and the SEC, and I would add ACC primary on March 1st will be critical for him as well. Jim, put down the Jack Daniels. It's not going to be that bad.
It's not too early to drink. We have three martinis. We can have, you know, let's make it a 4 or 5 martini lunch today.
We may need it.
Plus, it'll go well with my liquid breakfast.
Yeah, save it for tomorrow night's Democratic debate, which I'm sure neither one of us will watch.
We got a life to lead. Come on.
That's right. On that depressing note, Jim Garrity is with National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.